design assignment needs to prove the notice of requirements of the holders of recorded security interests, the requirement for disclosure. It also includes the 3B, and use that requirement to be distinguished in terms of being applied to Wells Fargo, the deed, which is a non-requirement, and then possibly to your four separate and independent reasons. First, in 2015, the Congress agent committed to distinguish, which is a thing that demonstrates that the notices are required for the requisition to be true. You would have to believe that the federal legislation unanimously put a notice of requirement in the statute to require notices to holders of recorded security interests, but it was already there for the first one to use these instances. But then, the position here was such a position. In fact, one of the judges in the district of Nevada wrote last year, the very need for the amendments indicates that the federal legislature foreseen that the statute previously did not require notice of the need that the 3116 did not incorporate sections 3 and 4 of all 7 of the federal legislation. That was objection on this 124 in itself, but in 1063, as far as this was done, in 10 of these cases, in the 2016. So, first we have the fact that the legislature created this very robust scheme, the legislature previously proposed, and we will ask it is prevalent with candidates in city selection that this rather than mandatory ones. In 3116.3, you have the notice of default and election to sell, which is included in provision. In 3116.3, the notice of sale, once again, you get optional notice, and all those two provisions expressly references what you see in 2111. So it seems like such a good practice was well aware of all the state of federal government, had they got its mind, and drafted these opt-in provisions, and you are not in their view of the statute. And 3D was mandatory, and mandatory notice, so it flowed back through in clause 116. All of those provisions make no sense. There are even some strangers in that interpretation.
Your predecessor's interest in this was aware of the existence of 116.116 at that time, in addition to the lawsuit. If it was evidence of it, would it be signed in process?
But there was not, because basically this is just a finish. She introduced us to the motion for summary judgment at CDC. However, the entire process is that it's not sufficient to guarantee the rights of holders of recorded security interests. In fact, if it's a statute out there in the world, if it's something that's bringing you and extinguishing property rights without notice, it's not a due process.
The owner is responsible for the statute. Those are the entities that are responsible for the statute. The very area in which it is operated, is that what you said?
No, it's also, you're not the same, but there are more extended instruments. For 20 years, no one ever tried to do this at this stage. No one thought this stage was going to happen. And it's just made the whole Wells Fargo listening to that without anybody suggesting that the homeowners association was more than a human property. No one suggested that they were completely extinguished and locked out entire means of trust. So Wells Fargo, like the main bank in the area, had not experienced this. In the last 4 years, there have been about 3,000 homes and hundreds of suits like this. But before about 8,000 or so, 2008, no one tried this. So they were well trusted what was happening in the market, and this was not an interpretation. That's also for 20 years ago, it was not practiced today. A third reason that we see their interpretation of the distinction cannot be sustained, and why it does not have a mandated notice that we render a constitution, is when we look at the evidence of the court's decision in the CIFAR, and in particular, in the block quote, the paragraph that does it, it's page 411 of SFR. And that block quote is fatal to the idea that 3B has a mandate of notice that flows backwards in 10 RS 116. You see, there's this one place, where 3B gets into SFR, and it is in the paragraph where the Supreme Court is instituting a all of his obligations and has explained how the statute works, and he gets a sentence that describes how 311.63 is adopted, and he gets a sentence that describes how the notice of sale is adopted, and in particular, it says that before foreclosure, the HRA must give notice of the sale to a holder of recorded securities of a client, and he must do that to get it. And it's the word that comes up here. He must do that to foreclose if the security interest holder, quote, is notified of the association before the mandate of the notice of sale of the existence of the security interest. And that, in this sense, is a C-set, S-E-E, and others in C-set for indirect support. And then he said, wow, well, so, well, you know, maybe it's back there. So the sentences that the Supreme Court wrote about the operation of this statute are here at the court, and it remains in court. And there's no sense, oh, by the way, there's no sense of reading the sentences with nonsense. If reading that mandate notice was extinguished and swallowed beyond the provisions of the system.
Are you suggesting basically
that the Supreme Court hasn't solved this for a purpose? Absolutely, Your Honor. I think the paragraph that the law court, which is on page 411, demonstrates that when you look at this, that the Supreme Court has made clear that there's not two years. In other words, quite possibly it is not a state that undertaking it, and it not two years is not sufficient of an injury. That paragraph comes to bear by the Supreme Court, the way it was. If they thought 3B flowed back and communicated those words, that would have solved the issue.
For exhausting cases for speaking, sometimes we learn for ourselves that the district court in Church Peter was from the incumbent, which is three.
But he basically just treated the existence of the bar like the motion as extinguishing the motion. And so there was a good cause to consider the due process implications of this particular district court. They were raised at one point in motion for some reason, but it was mentioned that we'd extinguish the process of this Well, the grant was raised in the federal constitutional process issues. The court had an opportunity in the court system to move that basis.
So what you're asking is to reverse the district court on its own
initiative? I'm not asking you to determine the statute that is actually constitutional as an opportunity to violate the amendment. I think it's clear from the purpose of the statute. Thank you. Member Newry, when one statute incorporates the other, it's read as if the one statute is included within the other. In interpreting statutes, you're supposed to read all parts of the statute. If there's a constitutional interpretation, constitutional interpretation, you're supposed to interpret it in the Constitution. So, for these reasons, the statutes are not big, and they do provide short notice to the claims. And I just want to take any steps. The conclusory steps that the judge first stated that the recitals are standing are conclusive, and it essentially shifts the burden. Once you put forth the recitals that the burden shifts to the other side, you show that it wasn't a default or that notice wasn't given. And they would not be present to the conclusory judgment. For that reason, the judgment of the district court should be affirmed.
And so, in the original argument that you were developing on Judge Monroe's determination that the state clients within the status of policy, that he was in this state, and that there was no motion showing otherwise, they didn't receive the notice, and so they did the best to not satisfy them. And none of the case was Judge Monroe's indicating to us, because it seems from the tweet and their responsibility,
I
just to look at the other part of their citation, where they did say C1.07.1.0, subsections 3, 8, and 4, requiring notice of default and notice of such each other person with an interest whose interest or claimed interest is subordinate to the deed of trust. So the last few words bring the more readiness of this. And this is a case before you on the person jurisdiction. And one of the matters before you for interpreted is that these two signatures of complaint between these two signatures of 07.1.0 does in fact require notice to the holders of all subordinate interests. The conclusion under Chapter 116 is our experience is only of two parts. A sub-priority case, which is lying on us, which has priority over the public's deed of trust, and we close that 9 months. Sub-priority has priority over the public's deed of trust. The bank has a subordinate interest in their returns, but this is a matter of law as decided by the Insular Court.
But it seems to me that there's two issues, and they raise their own state issues as well as. One of this is this part of the major reason that there's the other reason. And since it's a state issue, and then the other is on the notice, what it does seems to me that it's a state issue. The federal issues, it seems to me, are being raised by the race, and you tell me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you're going to speak on that. You know, the federal ones are two processes, the state one process, and then four issues, and four is to the notice.
That's not supposed to happen. The commercial reason that that's wrong, that often says that's the commercial reason to see the UCC concept. And it often gets into plain performance and adequacy of price. So that's the Supreme Court has ruled repeatedly in the extent of the old versus unjust case, which is an additional to an adequate price in the proof of fraud, oppression, or unfairness. They do cite their own number of cases from health states,
as Chevron,
and then as Chevron also is.
The greater term of the Supreme Court, it makes a question, it makes a statement, that is a common state issue here. On the reason that the matter was it's a matter of the state issue. The more we see here, and it's just a conclusion, no basis to be pursued. In the declaration of the state property right, there are more hopes than see, but the enactment of the statute.
All the cases from the past Supreme Court of the United States Supreme Court imply that there's got to be state action as well as the state act on, and there is no state act on in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sessions. If we go to the reply brief, some returns are brief, but also there's a full page just talking about the hearing. It's a page just taking 11 of the executive proposition as a motion for summary judgment. The matter is argued as how you are the gender to talk with them, and then under all you have to get submission to those interview processes, and the argument is made that those ones are given here, and indeed, it's an additional that doesn't say anything, which is correct. So, to the extent that the methodology and interview processes were raised, the daily opposition wasn't 15 pages, but regularly 20 pages, 15 pages is not the book of toss-off sentence. If you find that waiver, it's a nonsense. And they also want an arguing waiver. It's not a public judgment.
If that is the record.
The, I believe that I'll just have to look at this in the ERs that I have 48% in the position to issue for summary judgment. It manifestly is standards here, and that's the whole thing. They say, I'm going to see here, move along, but if you call them that, it's a foreclosure. The ordinary judicial foreclosure is a disease from the ordering, but it's even a judicial foreclosure on the trial in Chicago. You can see that the parties already have a fair credit of the institution. This is routine. It's exactly. The job is simply saying that we're, and I think Chef's much more relevant, the state is clearly improving some sort of private ordering. That's the deal. That's the line that
creates the law. If